Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And it's a snowy, fun-filled M Squared TechCast here in the greater Metro Detroitoplex. We made it through the snow, and we're here today for you. We got a great show ahead.
Laughing all the way.
Yeah, or something, or jingling, or
yeah.
I'm not
well,
sure
I came in from Ann Arbor, and I wasn't sure what to expect.
No.
I mean, that's it. My arms are really tired from jingling all the way.
Yeah.
But no, it was just very, very dry roads. I was amazed, actually.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yesterday was no fun, but they got it done overnight. So congratulations to our road commissions and state authorities and whatnot for doing a great job getting the roads plumbed.
Yeah.
And we're going to get right into the show right now. We've got the ever-popular, intrepid Kathleen Norton Schock with a guest. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good.
We're doing great.
Merry Christmas.
Good, good. Well, we're excited to be here. Diva Tech Talk is celebrating the end of the year. We have three more podcasts at www.divatechtalk.com about to be published in the next 3 weeks. But I'm really excited today because our episode 36, podcast 36, focused on an old friend of mine, Cindy Warner, who's been doing some very exciting things. She's always doing exciting things, but she's doing something really very cool right now. So I'd ask Cindy if she would come on and be our first segment on today's show. So, Cindy, are you there?
I am. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Fantastic. Ho, ho, ho. A slaying little road.
Yeah, so we're very thankful to have you on the show. And, of course, as I mentioned, people who might like to know your entire story can always go to divatechtalk.com, view our episode 36, and we were fortunate to have an almost 38-minute podcast where you took us through the genesis, the evolution of your really interesting and exciting career. And, of course, we know you to be a former executive with IBM, Salesforce.com, and Accenture, among others. But more recently, within the last year, you have now founded a new company called the 360 of Me, which is very intriguing and innovative. Can you tell us a little bit about the basic mission for that new venture?
Yeah, sure, Kathleen. So the basic mission is really to enable a consumer to house and share their digital identity or their digital footprint. And essentially, if you think of in today's world with all of this onboard car data, you think of IoT or the Internet of Things and all of the sensory data, whether it's a Fitbit that we wear. And then, of course, you think of the ever-present healthcare records that with all the EMRs and the EHRs are now silos of data of you all over the place that don't have a kind of a longitudinal view of your health record. What we're trying to do is put all those things together so that you control them, that you can take them with you as a very mobile person. And most importantly, you can share them with people when needed, especially in, you know, if you needed a second opinion for a health matter or what have you. So that's what we're up to.
How interesting. So how old is this company?
We launched in May of 2017. I retired from IBM April 30th and founded the company on May 1st. The company is located in Royal Oak.
Okay, so it's May of 2016.
I'm sorry, 2016. Sorry about that.
Right,
ahead of myself.
You're ahead of yourself here.
That's right.
And always in innovative fashion. Yeah. And it's just, are you currently funded by a grant or venture capital, or how is the company currently funded?
Yeah, we had three angel investors initially, and right now we're going through a seed round, which is the round that's going to get us to market in Q1 of 2017. So at the present time, we're not funded by venture capitalists. After a seed round, we'll probably do a Series A, which will then lead us to some venture capitalists.
Okay, excellent. And of course, you, with all of your experience, have a growing, well, you've had a very robust network of people in the IT world, again, coming as you do out of some of the behemoths in the space and also having done some really innovative and interesting consulting along the way. So I imagine that's not much of a concern. T- tell us a little bit about the initial markets that the 360 of me will be serving with the new platform. Why did you choose the ones you did? And talk a little bit more about their breadth and depth.
Sure. So the platform itself has two main components to it. One would be the nexus, as we call it, which is the profile and the demographics of a person. So age group, gender, things of that nature. And then we have what we call vaults. And those vaults, over time, there will end up being 12 vaults. And the vaults are actually aligned pretty closely with industry sectors. The first three vaults that we're going to launch in Q1 of 2017 are healthcare, finance, and automotive. And the reason that we selected those three, the healthcare one I kind of alluded to a minute ago, we've created with the mandate for EMRs and EHRs, we've now created quite a plethora of silos of data for a consumer where their data of them in the healthcare space resides all over the place. And whether it's a specialist, whether it's a hospital network or whomever it is, it tends to be that there's no real complete or full picture of an individual's health record. In addition to that, there's usually no historical representation of, you know, ever since they were a child, as an example, or even a family history of challenges. So what a physician sees today typically is a pretty fragmented view of a consumer, which tends to lead to a fair bit of a challenge as far as trying to really understand what's going on with somebody. And so we chose that one because of the mandate from EHRs and EMRs and what that's created for a consumer, kind of the bifurcated data that it's created. Auto and finance, kind of same thing. One, automotive, with all the onboard computer data, that data, if a consumer wants to share it with an auto manufacturer, can be extremely insightful, and they would share it anonymously. We would share it off the platform to an OEM. It would come back with insights for a consumer on how their car is functioning, et cetera. And it could really lead to things like ensuring that there were no massive recalls, because there would be foresight to see problems happening across a different, you know, or a consistent make or model. And so there's a lot of predictability that can happen out of automotive if a consumer anonymously is willing to share that onboard computer data. And then finance really has a lot of tentacles into healthcare. The one thing that you should understand is why the reason we called this 360 of me is we are all more than a silo of data. In other words, our health is far more than just a symptom or a diagnosis. It tends to have other components such as your financial well-being, if you experience a financial crisis, or if you have a lack of mobility, you don't have an automobile to even so much as get prescriptions. So we look at a life in context, which is why we call it 360 of me, and these things are all interchanged. But finance and healthcare are interspersed, and we look at finance like your insurance to see what kind of insurance you have to be able to afford and pay for the healthcare that is, you know, and has been diagnosed. So that's the interspersing between those. But that's why we chose those three to start with.
Now, as part of those markets, are you already approaching or is there a plan to approach the major companies who are in that area? For instance, in healthcare, will you be approaching major health systems or health software providers? I mean, how are you planning to penetrate each of those vertical markets?
Yeah, the first, in late April of 2017, the P in HIPAA, for anybody that's regulated by, that's a HIPAA-regulated healthcare company, the P in HIPAA incites that a healthcare organization or network has to provide electronic portability of your health records. In other words, if you request your health records, they have to be able to provide them to some place, some destination for you electronically. So we'll solve that problem. There really isn't another solution on the market today that can solve that problem as comprehensively as we can. So the first one out of the box is what we're trying to do is put veterans on the platform, because I think, as we're all well aware, veterans need to be able to take their health data with them to seek services outside of the VA, because the VA can't quite keep up with the pipeline of requests from the veterans. So the Veterans Administration has allowed them to seek medical attention outside of the VA. But in order to do that, they need to have their entire and comprehensive medical record. So we're working with them to be that platform to port those VA records onto to allow a veteran then to take that with them. So that's one example. And then the other is what we call constituent services for state and local government. We're doing a lot of work in creating a consumer data lake. So think the city of Chicago, where all those consumers in the city of Chicago or the city of Detroit have access to constituent services through the city. And the first part of that process is that the city itself gets the consumers registered on our platform, and then they overlay the services available to those consumers on top of what we call our data lake or our platform of consumers. So those are two examples of how we're rolling out the platform in early 2017.
Interesting. Okay. So those are your platform rollout plans in 17. Do you have other plans or are they all contingent on how the first? First of all, the platform itself is going to be released in January. Is that still the case? Are you still on schedule for?
It is.
Okay.
Yep, we are on schedule for that.
Okay. And so what are the other plans, if you have them even sketched out for the first quarter? Do you have certain events, certain venues?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a big one that we're working on now is for HIMSS, which is the big healthcare show in February. And we have a very strong partnership with Salesforce Health Cloud. And Salesforce Health Cloud is a vertical swatch, a vertical view of somebody's health. We then create that horizontal, or we call it longitudinal health record, which gives greater depth and breadth of a health record for Salesforce's Health Cloud customers. What we're doing is, in conjunction with Salesforce Health Cloud and Higi, which is a company that has all of the devices in like a CVS or a Rite Aid where you can check your blood pressure and things on the spot. We're rolling out a program there to create a 360 of me record for anybody that uses a Higi device. You will then get a free 360 of me account where all of your Higi data, so no matter where you are, if you just need to check your blood pressure while you're waiting to pick up something in a Rite Aid, that will all go into a 360 of me account that's created for you. We'll launch that jointly with Salesforce Health Cloud and with Higi at HIMSS.
Okay, Kathleen, it's Matt. I just want to let you know we have about 1 minute left.
Okay, so then I think the most important thing, Cindy, is for our listeners to figure out how they can find out more about you. How do they contact you and find out more about the 360 of me? What, in order, besides your website address, anything else?
Yeah, they can contact me directly if they wanted to. It's C as in cat, Cindy Warner at 360ofme.com. Additionally, we're on Twitter. They can find us at Cindy L. Warner 1 on Twitter or 360ofme CEO at Twitter.
Excellent. Any questions from you or Mike, Matt, or before we let Cindy go?
Nope. I think you've covered it all, and that's a great job as usual. Thank you very much, Kathleen Norton-Chuck, and your guest, Cindy Warner of 360 and Me. And we'll be listening to Diva Tech Talk in the days ahead. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, another fun-filled segment. We're going to be talking about various forms of IT security right now with Rob Tassani of Red Level. He's got a bunch of new acronyms for us. BOSS, DROS, Baba Ramdas, I don't know, maybe, but I'm just wondering.
I don't think that was one of them.
No, that's not one of them. But Rob, first of all, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, guys, for having me back again.
All right.
I'm
so,
just trying to fill your guys' vocabulary up with as many acronyms as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me, what is
Bass or Boss?
Bass or Boss, spelled B-A-A-S.
It's not like a bluegill, though, right?
It's something as a service. I know that. But what does the B stand for?
Yeah, it's Backup as a Service, pronounced Baz. And Backup as a Service for clientele that is looking to have a different type of solution outside of the old tape and taking the tape off site. Backup as a service gives you the ability to have your backups go off site just utilizing the internet and some backup software from multiple vendors that are out in the industry today. And it basically allows a client to pay on a per monthly basis. So it's as a service. So instead of having to invest in buying a backup software title, putting in all that work and maintaining that software, you can just subscribe to it essentially with the as-a-service type model where you pay monthly for your backups to go off-site, and it's managed and monitored by an entity such as Red Level that we monitor and manage those on a monthly basis. So we kick off backups to our own cloud, up to Microsoft Azure, depending on the client's needs that come through from a regulation standpoint or a compliancy standpoint. So that's really where that backup as a service ties into from a client standpoint, is looking to have that taken off site still without having to have those tapes. Because a lot of the issues that came with the tapes before is that while the tapes would go off site to, say, Iron Mountain, once they brought them back for a restoration capability after, say, 2 or 3 months or maybe even a year, if they had to restore back that far, those tapes would be pretty useless and they wouldn't be able to recover it. Or the technology would have changed and they would have upgraded their tape drive and all the data would have been on an old formatted tape that they didn't even have a tape drive to slide it in anymore. Hmm. So the backup as a service really gives you that capability of taking it to the cloud, getting it off-site, and providing that off-premise copy of your data.
So that was Bass, and now we've also got DRAS.
Right. Yeah, so DRAS takes backup as a service to a higher level and gives you disaster recovery as a service. And
okay, gotcha.
There's some similarities between both of them, and then there's also some differences between both of them. So the similarities are, your data is still going off-site to a cloud provider, you know, such as Azure or our own cloud, et cetera. But the DR as a service gives you the capability to perform tests, so disaster recovery testing. It also gives you the capability of having a disaster plan in the event that your headquarters were to go down. So taking that data off-site and taking and pushing your environment out into a cloud provider somewhere gives you that business continuity plan and kind of disaster recovery plan rolled into one. There are some disaster recovery solutions out there that will provide a kind of a slimmed down version of backup as a service built into the software to where you can pull back some changes from, you know, say 15 seconds ago all the way back to maybe 30 days ago. And then there's solutions out there from a DR standpoint that give the client the ability to test their own disaster recovery plan, and it gives them the report on whether or not it was successful. So they can take a tested outage without having to affect production. So if you wanted to test failing over your main systems without affecting production because you're still up and running, you can do that. Almost on a daily basis, really. There's no limitation, so on and so forth, from a testing standpoint. Your only limitation comes in is when you have bandwidth restrictions. So for some clients, I mean, the backup as a service and disaster recovery as a service doesn't always fit every client if they have if they're still stuck, say, on T1s, which are old and antiquated. Or if they're on maybe low-end broadband connections where the connectivity is not dedicated, or if they have the ability to lift those bandwidth restrictions off of their current bandwidth, then they can get the data offsite a lot quicker, and it makes it go a lot faster.
All right, so what would you say are the major differences between the BAS and DRAS systems?
The major differences are the ability to have a disaster recovery plan versus just offsite backups. So the offsite backups gives you the ability to have your data stored offsite, and you can recover it as necessary. Meaning, if you were to have a disaster declared at your headquarters, for example, the backup as a service would be a lot more lengthier time to recover your entire environment. Whereas the DR as a service gives you the ability to have kind of like a warm standby environment offsite. And so that if you had to declare that disaster, you could essentially spin those virtual machines up fairly quickly. I mean, there's still going to be some weight there. The other downside to DR as a service, if you needed backups offsite, is that not all DR as a service software companies or providers out there will have the back end historical data like you would in a backup as a service. So I guess maybe to make it a little more clear here, backup as a service gives you some historical and offsite backups, and DR as a service gives you more of like a point in time recovery of your production systems without necessarily the backups.
Since we got about 5 minutes left, let's condense the next two questions kind of into one. Why don't you just compare the benefits of BAS versus DRAS?
Sure. So condensed, I guess I kind of spoke a little bit about some of the benefits already.
Yeah.
The real major benefits are that the backup as a service and the DR as a service both provide the clients the ability to get their data offsite, which is a big regulation slash compliancy standpoint that depending on what the client's business in, they may have to save, 7 years of backups, or they may have to have a DR site that is forced by regulations of governments or of healthcare, et cetera. And the backup as a service and DR as a service gives you that capability to have that data go offsite and be readily available and testable and recoverable. So in addition to backing up offsite, you can also restore from offsite. So earlier this year, we had some malware, some Trojans that the CryptoMapper virus that came out, kind of wiped out a lot of environments for us, and we had to recover from backups versus paying the Bitcoin to unlock that data. Well, if your local on-premise backups backs up the encrypted data, then you're either recovering from tape or you're pulling it back from a backup as a service provider. So that's another benefit as well.
Okay, so what are you doing? As a company, I'm kind of curious about what you do for your own systems.
Yeah, so for our own systems, we actually utilize both backup and DR as a service for ourselves and for our current clientele. From our standpoint, we run a cloud that is a multi-tenant environment that has disaster recovery as a service built into it, so it goes off to a different location and is replicated so that we can test the DR capabilities. And then from a Red Level standpoint internally, we use our systems in a backup as a service standpoint to actually back up from our systems into our cloud to get our data technically offsite.
All right. So you're looking at a customer. What do you recommend they do? I mean, which ones do you recommend go one direction and which ones the other?
I think a lot of that has to deal with any regulations or compliances that they have to adhere to from a regulation standpoint. And that's primarily the first couple of questions that we would ask of them outside of how long they need to hold that data. And that helps determine the path that we would take in order to push them towards one solution or the other, or maybe even both.
Okay, so... I guess this is the last question. We're a little under 2 minutes to go now. What would you recommend a company do to consider taking on one of these projects? What would be first steps for one of your clients?
So first steps obviously would be to contact Red Level, and we would be able to get a solutions architect out there to help identify the requirements from that client's environment perspective. So if they need to have their current backups reviewed so that they can go off-site, or if they need to have a regulation, or if they have a regulation that forces them to go off-site, then we can help determine that for them. Or if they have new federal regulations or compliances that they have to adhere to that force them to have a disaster recovery plan, then we can help them walk, or we can help walk them through that entire process.
And why don't we tell them how to get in touch with you or Red Level or whoever you want them to reach out to?
Sure, yes. RedLevelNetworks.com is our website. 248-412-8200 is our phone number. And we have multiple client or multiple account executives that can work with them to get them started on this process, and as well as multiple solutions architects that can come out and kind of work through this discovery with them and determine what the best course of action is.
Now we're going to have to leave it at that. This is Bob Tassani from Red Level Networks telling you about some really cool backup ideas out there. And trust me, with all the bad guys trying to get to your goods, your intellectual property, you need to have backup.
Absolutely.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan. I'm sorry, Matt was making a face there.
Yeah, whoever you are.
Yeah, right. I forget sometimes.
Okay. And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast. This time we've got our friend Timber Shea, and she has a guest for us.
We should tell people what Timber does for a living, perhaps.
Okay, go ahead.
She's with Inforum and runs the Engage program.
That trains entrepreneurs up and does a fine job of it, too, I might add. So, Timber, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me again.
All right.
Hope you guys are staying warm.
Oh, yeah. Not a problem. All I have to do is go out and push the snowblower around. And
yeah, we got a fire going on right here in the studio, so we're good.
Yeah, sorry, Dave.
Oh, excellent. Well, thanks again for having us. I want to introduce your audience today to Dusty Welsh. She is the founding partner for a company called Cause Activators LLC. Dusty's also a former pitch competition winner from Entrepreneur U. So hi, Dusty. How are you?
Hey, Timber. Hey, gang. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, no problem.
So
Dusty, I think the first thing everybody is dying to know is what exactly is Cause Activators?
Yeah, so Cause Activators is a fun matchmaking website, and what we do is we match up local businesses with local nonprofits opportunities for businesses to get engaged, get their employees engaged, and kind of fulfill their goals in the community.
Very cool. So I love that it's a business being paired with a nonprofit. What exactly is the benefit of that to the company, and what's the benefit to the nonprofit for going through your technology?
Yeah, so Cause Activators, we are a technology company, and we're also a triple bottom line company. So we focus on the people, planet, and profit. And so what we offer to nonprofits is an easy way to connect with businesses in the community, form new partnerships to meet their needs. And then businesses can get their team engaged, which is really becoming a focus of small, medium, and large companies now more than ever.
I love the triple bottom line. What was that again?
It's people, planet, and profit. So we think all of those are, you know, really important to running a great company.
I agree. I've heard a lot about the millennials being very socially conscious.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like a fabulous concept. What was the inspiration behind starting your company and matchmaking for companies and nonprofits?
Yeah, so the inspiration really came from many years of experience that I have working with nonprofits and also businesses. I've worked with over 125 nonprofits, and a lot of organizations and private businesses share the same challenges. And a lot of that is adapting to technology and making their job easier, and technology solutions that can save everyone a lot of time and money. And so that's really where the idea came from, to offer an online solution to make it really easy for businesses and nonprofits kind of to get their job done.
That's fantastic. So how would a company, if I worked for a large company, how would I get in touch with you and know what you can offer to my employees? For me, socially, I'm sure there's a social media aspect technologically also.
Yeah, Tamara, there is. So that's some great questions. It's definitely about sharing your story. You know, so businesses not only have the job of discovering great opportunities, they have to get their team on board, they want to align their values, and they really want to share their story on social media to really get their full return on their investments. But it can be really hard to find those opportunities. So if a business wants to get involved, they can go to our website, which is causeactivators.com. They can sign in, get a username, and then they can search for all different kind of opportunities by putting in tags and categories. And they can just really get involved in the community very quickly and easily.
That's terrific. What if I was a small nonprofit?
Yeah, so again, nonprofits can go right onto the website, and we do have an application and vetting process. We want to make sure that all the nonprofits in our network are really high quality, well-engaged, trusted causes. They go ahead, they fill out their application process, we vet and approve them. If they're approved, they get their username and password, and they can go on and post all kind of opportunities in real time. So things that they would post would be volunteers they're looking for, corporate sponsorship opportunities they have available, and other ways that businesses can get involved.
That's fantastic. So what stage of growth would you say that your company is in today?
Yeah, so we're a startup technology company, and as you mentioned, we were winners at the Entrepreneur in You Business Plan and Pitch Competition. We got some prize money from the Michigan Women's Foundation, and we went on to launch our technology this October. We actually premiered Cause Activators at the MySherm Human Resource Convention at Cobo Hall. And so we've just been signing up businesses and nonprofits and getting our technology out there in the community.
That's and a pretty good forum for you, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, Timber, you know, I learned about Inforum, applied to your program for women entrepreneurs, which really, you know, elevated my company and my abilities to a new level, which was a great opportunity for us.
Thank you, Dusty. Yeah, there's some amazing, amazing female entrepreneurs in our entrepreneurial program.
Oh, absolutely. So it's programs like Inforum, Michigan Women's Foundation. We've been involved with Launchpad at Walsh College. You know, all of these help to give entrepreneurs like myself, you know, kind of give us that chance to realize our dreams and really get the skills and networking that we need.
Well, that's great. Thanks, Dusty. And actually, those three organizations, including ours you just mentioned, are in collaboration for Entrepreneur U every year. So it really is a great collaborative effort within the ecosystem to elevate our women entrepreneurs, which is terrific.
Yes, it is. It's just another example of what Detroiters and Metro Detroit can really do when we all work together to give startup companies a chance.
Great. Great. Some advice to other female entrepreneurs. What would you say, what would you consider to be the top two or three elements of success?
Yeah, I would say the top one is getting out there and meeting people, asking for help, and putting yourself out there, because you never know who you're going to meet. And I have found so often when I've been stuck, you know, I would go to a networking event or some type of a social or a seminar, and I always happen to meet that one person that kind of opens the door to the next phase. So that's really important. And then, you know, just don't give up, because it is really hard, but I find the breakthroughs really are, you know, on just the other side of just, you know, perseverance.
Absolutely. So as we mentioned, Dusty participated in Inform's Engage Masterclass, which is a confidential facilitated peer-to-peer founders forum for emerging second stage women entrepreneurs. Since we began the program in 2012, we've had 79 women entrepreneurs incorporate 38 companies, create 234 jobs in the state of Michigan, been granted 25 patents, and they've received almost $20 million in follow-on funding. So we're really, really proud of those numbers. And any female entrepreneurs out there who are looking to get involved, we actually are starting another class in January. And you can just go to the Inform website and informmichigan.org to find that application and learn more. And Dusty's a huge success from the program. So what would you say, Dusty, is next for Cause Activators? What's the next big goal you have?
Well, our next big goal really is going into the new year and launching our platform across the state of Michigan for both businesses and nonprofits, and to really, you know, get out there in the community and just really help businesses and nonprofits meet their goals. And I would say for all the women entrepreneurs listening, Inform was a life-changing experience for me, and I was really a different person. And I felt so much more equipped as a business owner when I graduated from that. What was an 8-month program, Timber?
Yeah, 8 months. But only one day
fantastic.
A month.
One day a month, absolutely. No, it was totally manageable with my schedule, and I really look forward to that one Saturday every month to grow as an entrepreneur in a safe space with the great other women that were in our cohort. It was such a blessing.
Was there something specific from the Engage Masterclass that actually you remember that really played a pivotal, place in your journey?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a safe space. And, you know, I mentioned this to you, Timber, and Rachel Downs, and of course, Patty Glaza, who are also running the program, that it was a lot of the speakers that you brought in and the subject matter experts, and also learning the peer-to-peer learning from other women. And the main thing, realizing that you're not alone, you know, all women entrepreneurs are going through this very difficult journey. So it was therapy, and it was education, and it was master skill building. Fantastic.
That's great. So Dusty, how do I get involved? Whether I'm a company, I would like to volunteer, I would like to register my nonprofit. What's the best way to do this, and what can I expect to hear from someone?
Yeah, so the best way for nonprofits to post their opportunities live is to go to our website, causeactivators.com. And businesses can get a password and get signed on to search and fulfill opportunities. We always let everyone know that, unlike a lot of other programs, we don't take any of the money from nonprofits or businesses. So we just make the match, and they come together and connect. And of course, going on our social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all a great way to learn more about Cause Activators and get involved.
And why don't we tell folks, Timber, a little bit more about Inform? Let's just assume some people out there haven't heard about it. So tell them a little bit more about that.
I can't even believe that people haven't heard about it.
I know. What's up with that, right? You know, it's certainly not because of us, but go ahead, tell.
So we are a professional organization that's actually been in existence for 54 years. We were formerly known as the Women's Economic Club. And we have been accelerating and elevating women in their careers in all all points of their career. So from right out of college all the way through board service, including entrepreneurs, women veterans, women leaders. We do events. We have leadership development classes like the one Dusty was involved in. And just all kinds of things, learning labs. So any place you're at, there's something within the organization, and the networking is unbelievable. We have 2,000 members across the state of Michigan, cross industry and cross function.
And you got a big operation out of Grand Rapids now.
Mm-hmm, very, very big group in Grand Rapids. It's our second largest market behind Detroit.
Well, that's great. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more about your classes coming up in January. I know there's a cost involved. I can't recall the number, but I know you have scholarships. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we do. So Masterclass, like I said, it's a confidential, facilitated peer-to-peer founders forum. So not so much a curriculum as you would find in a normal, you know, education environment, but really based on what the women entrepreneurs in the class need. When we say emerging second stage, we're really hoping to help them get to the point where they'll be ready for angel or venture capital and, you know, getting to that $1 million in revenue threshold. We keep the cohort small, 10 to 12 participants each time. Our facilitator is Patty Glaza, who's a managing partner for Invest Detroit, so one of the foremost venture capital women in the country, and also just knows everybody you could possibly know in town to really be helpful. So she's got great connects. She's got amazing knowledge of the industry and the ecosystem. So we will start again January 2017. We're taking applications now on the website. We have been very fortunate to receive funding to help support scholarships for women entrepreneurs because we do know most of them are bootstrapping. So this is a great opportunity. I'd love to, anyone who would like to be, who's interested or would like to apply, right on the website in forummichigan.org. It's Engage Masterclass. And please feel free to send me a note.
All right. Thanks very much, Tembra Shea of Inforum and her guest, Dusty Welch of Cause Activators. Thanks very much for your appearance here today. And for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back.
It's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and we'll figure out who's going to talk first soon enough. So.
Yes. And
you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Indeed. And we're waiting on our guest, Claude, and hopefully we're going to pronounce this correctly, Molinari, who is the general manager at the Cobo Center, where they've just done a $2 million wireless upgrade. And we were just kicking around some of these phenomenal numbers before we went on air again. And it's big. It's They can handle.
Well, the whole renovation was almost $300 million. $279 million for the entire reno, as they say, and part of that was a major tech upgrade there because the tech there before was kind of clunky, you know.
Old building.
It should be state of the art now, though. It certainly sounds like it's going to be.
Yeah, 32,000 simultaneous users, and you were looking up some other data.
Yeah, during last year's auto show, that's the largest event that's held there during the year. Their internet usage peaked.
I think we may have our guest
during
here.
Press days at over 14,000 unique users. So they do have a lot of people online demanding online services there, especially during press days.
Is this Claude?
This is Claude.
Hey, Claude, it's Matt Rausch
and Mike Brennan. How
Hello,
you
Matt.
Doing?
Hi.
Hey, and we're just debating on how to pronounce your last name. Pronounce it for us.
Molinari.
You got it right, Matt. Very good. Okay. And what we were doing while we were waiting for you to come online, we were talking a little bit about your $2 million wireless technology upgrade that will handle up to 32,000 users. And Matt was looking up some of the data for the auto show. That's where you came in. So pretty phenomenal.
Gotcha.
400 different wireless access points. You guys have been busy down there.
Yeah, it's been a tremendous undertaking, but we feel it's really well worth it. And again, we're trying to stay ahead of our competition and keep up with technology. You know, as technology keeps upgrading, Aruba and our partners in the IT field have told us that we're pretty good until about 2021, 2022, and then at that point, I might be looking to have to invest again.
Okay. So this is 802.11 something, right? The new technology is?
Correct.
Is it AC, I think, is the latest standard?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and so that's the one that you're compliant to. Well, it is possible, although it requires an awful lot of bandwidth to get 100 meg connections under that technology, which is pretty phenomenal, but most people don't need that fast. But you do have an awful lot of press in there, right? Any idea how many reporters are coming this year for press days?
We'll have over 5,000 reporters on site during the event, and that's registered reporters. There's still some bandits that come in and do their own live blogging and things like that. But
that would be us, right?
Yeah.
So
I've got my credential. I'm happy.
The media center, which is in our ballroom, that's where we house the vast majority of them. But then we'll have media scrums in each booth so that while each car is doing their national reveal or international reveal during the event, each of the major OEMs has a 15-minute window where they'll do their major press conference, and we'll have huge numbers of people all connected to our access points in these small areas. And in the past, they would become overwhelmed. The access points would be saturated so that everybody would slow down. So you could be 100 feet away and be live streaming and then be directly underneath, you know, crowded around 200 or 300 other people and not be able to even get a signal. So it was very, we're trying to, you know, limit that and maximize the speed of our guests.
Now, how long did it take to get all this wired up? When did you start this process?
Well, it's a continuing process, but basically this upgrade here, we're using the same wires that we already had. We're just changing out the access points. But those access points, it's about a four-month process to get it all done. We took it in phases of, we looked at the calendar of what halls were available in between events, and our team just went around and made these changes, and it went very well, actually. I'm ahead of schedule and right on time.
Because the auto, well, for us, Matt and I both have press credentials for the 9th. Then we're going, innovation event on the 8th, too. I got you for that, Matt. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a lot of folks in there. But the real test will be when the public days start, because everybody's brother has got a smartphone, right? And they're all going to want to take pictures of them in front of some vehicle and send it back to Facebook. And so that'll be the real test, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's really, though, they're, and what's good about that is that when they're all spread out with all of our new access point, again, for the visitors that use our Wi-Fi network, the upgrades will be like moving from a one-lane highway to a three-lane super speedway. And that's really going to make a difference. And we think that we're going to really come through that with flying colors and that our guests are going to get a great experience.
I was just going to ask about the other technology upgrades that were part of the renovation. It's not just the Wi-Fi. There's digital signage all over the place now, right?
Correct. Yeah, we've got outside of every meeting room and exhibit hall and the ballrooms, we've got all kinds of digital signage and monitors that can be customized for every event. And then, of course, you've got the exterior digital spectaculars with our marquee board that faces Jefferson and the Lodge Highway. And then also on the corner of Washington and Congress, we have full video and audio capability on our video board at that location.
Yeah, the square footage of that sign.
Great game changers. Just fantastic.
Yeah, the big marquee sign is almost 5,000 square feet. That's like four times the size of my house, so congratulations. But
probably lit up better too, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, this time of year, I've got a lot of lights. Okay, but, but normally, yeah, normally it would be.
The other question I was going to ask, this is totally separate. I've lost track. There was some talk about perhaps getting Joe Louis Arena, or at least that space, and blending that into Cobo, and I've lost track of that whole discussion. Is that a possibility or what?
Well, I think anything is possible. At this point, though, the Detroit Regional Convention Facility Authority does not have rights to that property. In the bankruptcy, the Fidget Group was awarded that land, and we're anxious to get some information as to what they're doing and where we can perhaps be a part of that. We welcome that opportunity, but at this point, we're standing by waiting for them to announce what their plans are going to be, and we'll go from there.
Because I know there's been some talk about that you'd love to be able to be like the McCormick Place in Chicago, a lot bigger. But obviously, you're right on the river. You got all these buildings around you. Is there any way to expand Cobo without expanding into the Joe Louis space? Is there another option?
There are limited options, but expansion is really not our biggest issue. I mean, it's not even an issue at all. I mean, we're large enough to maintain or to host most of the biggest events in the world. If we had a challenge in downtown Detroit, it would be lack of hotel rooms.
Yeah, probably true.
We need more hotel rooms. We're not losing events because we're not big enough to host them.
Okay.
Well, there's only a couple of events, that really require mammoth amounts of space. CES would be one. There's really not that many of the ones that really require like 2 million square feet or something. You've got what, 700,000 there, roughly, something like that.
Correct. Yeah, just a little over 700,000 square feet. We're one of the top 20 largest convention centers in North America, and again, we've got a great package here, and our ballroom is state of the art. With all of the technology that any ballroom really between New York, Las Vegas, any of the major cities, I would put our ballroom up against anybody's. It's a spectacular venue, and it's used constantly.
Yeah. So besides the auto show, what other event fills up Cobo like that?
Well, the Autorama, which is the largest hot rod show in the world, is actually takes up every square inch of our exhibit space. The Society of Automotive Engineers, the SAE, has an annual conference that takes up the vast majority of the building. And then we do a lot of national and international conventions that take up a great deal of space. We've got the Shell Eco Marathon, which is a ride and drive type of vehicle where students are putting together an event that is to see how far cars can travel on fuel, and that takes up the vast majority of the building. And they're
that also takes
a 3-year engagement here in Detroit this year, and then that's followed right up with FIRST Robotics, which is a STEM conference, science, technology, engineering, and math, and that's like a robotics competition, and that's going to also take up the vast majority of the space in Cobo.
Yeah, my employer, Lawrence Tech, is involved in the Shell Super Mileage. We've got a Shell Super Mileage team that was a top 10 finisher this year. So, ring the shameless plug bell. We were happy to be
there. There you go. Sort
of our home field.
Go ahead
here,
and ring it there, so. Jess. Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, unfortunately, we are out of time. But so let's just thank Claude Molinari, the general manager at Cobo. And we'll look forward when we get in there in another month or so to putting your new wireless network to the test. But for now, this is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast.
And we are proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. Listen to all the great shows at Podcast Detroit.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.